Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Bring in show music, please.
Hi, I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on Squawk Pod. Disney detente. The House of Mouse wins its boardroom battle.
Bob Iger does have the chops. He's done this before.
Barry Diller, media mogul and IAC chairman, on wrapping up the drawn-out proxy fight.
It is a lot of sound and fury signifying nothing. It was a grand waste of time.
And the evolution of entertainment, where streaming and scrolling go next.
The idea that China is going to use it to indoctrinate Americans to interests of China is, I think, absurd.
Social media hitting kids hard, anxieties on the rise, and Snapchat testing a new feature that could just make it worse.
Evan Spiegel, if you're listening, you're a jerk. Stop it.
Tech investor Bradley Tusk on how big tech just can't help themselves.
Until they actually learn that there is a price to be paid, they will do what the market keeps telling them to do, which is generate more users and more activity and more revenue.
Plus, big fish versus the Fed, and Apple's plan for in-home robots?
What would your robot do for you?
Pick up clothes, do the laundry.
I mean, I can think of some really perverted things. I mean, there's a Curb Your Enthusiasm I've seen.
It's Thursday, April 4th, 2024. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue it, please.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We're live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Everybody's here in studio,
yep.
Thankfully.
Nice to see you. Yep.
Fighting your
well
way
rested.
Back today. Yeah.
Of course.
Well rested. Happy.
Meantime, the Fed and inflation in focus. So yesterday, we spoke to Steve Cohen right here on the broadcast, chairman and CEO of Point 72, about his expectations for a rate cut.
I think the market expects 3 cuts. I think that's the number. I don't disagree with that. I think inflation's been, you know, somewhat contained. And I think, I mean, ultimately, what it'll come down to is that a true statement or not. The Fed thinks eventually is going to come down to 2%.
Right.
Inflation rate.
What do you think?
I think that's going to be hard.
Meantime, Greenlight Capital's David Einhorn speaking to Scott Wapner yesterday about the same topic. He said bringing inflation down will be harder than investors think.
How many times are they going to cut this year?
I think fewer than are priced in right now.
So fewer than 3?
Sure.
You think they cut? You think there's a chance they don't do anything?
There's a chance. I think inflation is reaccelerating. I think there's a lot of indication of that.
And as a defensive play against a potential market downturn, Einhorn saying that he's loading up on his gold position. Greenlight Capital owned $74 million in the Spider Gold Trust as of the end of the fourth quarter. Einhorn also saying yesterday that gold is a very large position for them and includes physical gold bars. He said it's a way to hedge the risk of the problem with the overall monetary and fiscal policies in America and the impact of too loose policies.
I can't remember the year Einhorn.
I was just trying to look that up right now.
It's at least 5.
Just when he first thought gold was going to be.
He loaded up.
Yeah, loaded up.
And it didn't work.
It didn't work out. I was just trying to look that up.
But if he held it, starting to work out. I don't know if, you know, what the annual
record highs,
would be.
But it was a while.
But it was a while ago. And he actually
did a few, I think it was more than five, because time flies.
And he did a couple of mea culpas on it. I miscalculated this. I miscalculated that for whatever reason. Disney was weird. Yesterday it actually turned down after this news came out. I guess that was probably buy the rumor, sell the news, but Disney did defeat Nelson Peltz, the activist shareholder. Bitterly contested proxy battle. Shareholders voted to elect the company's entire proposed slate of nominees, rejecting Peltz's bid for 2 seats on the board. Shares of Disney closed yesterday's session after all was said and done, down 3%. Bob Iger, unshackled. And he's there. He's got a full backing of everybody, and he's now can go from sort of repairing Disney and what had happened after he left to to a growth phase, which includes video games and...
tougher issue right now to go back to the slate. The cost cutting was probably the easier part of this move, but Bob Iger does have the chops. He's done this before.
We'll see.
Yeah.
But the reason why the stock would drop, or at least not move materially higher,
an
is because sense is if Nelson was there, there'd be a lot of short-term maneuverings potentially.
Right.
I would make a...
I don't know if that's great for long-term.
Well, that's what I'd say. I'd make a very long-term bet on Bob Iger and Disney, but you're not necessarily going to get a short-term pop out of it. I think that's... That's almost to be expected.
But as much as we knew about it, it was almost, we knew long ago that it wasn't going to work for, that Nelson wasn't going to work for him. It was just weird that when it was official, I mean, how many days have we been saying that, you know, that he's, we've got this
many. I didn't
think
it was going to work for a very long time, but I think people, you know, play along with this sort of very bizarre.
The activists, and.
You know, narratives.
I don't know what you do, Neutron. What would you do? To buy back or something? You already raised a dividend, I think.
You're saying if Nelson Peltz was there?
I mean, that was part of the problem. What would have been the quick...
I don't think people knew what would the quick...
I don't know what the quick...
And I think anything that's quick might have hurt a long term, and that was the issue.
Right, I just don't know if that would have popped the stock or not.
I mean, James Gorman said it. A lot of what Peltz was talking about was backward-looking. Stuff that was already they'd already done. Let's also talk about Apple this morning. It's reportedly looking at developing home robots after abandoning its electric vehicle ambitions. According to Bloomberg, engineers at the company have been looking into a robot that can follow users around their homes. The report says that Apple is also looking into a tabletop device that uses robotics to adjust a display screen. You know, if you are, let's say, doing a FaceTime call, it would be sitting there. If we went like this with your head, the screen on the other end would do the same thing and kind of move around. So moving a little closer to the Jetsons. Apple declined a CNBC request to comment on that story.
I was more interested, by the way, in this new LLM that they might be building, which, if you believe the research report related to it, large language model could be as good, if not better, than ChatGPT-4. And that's something that I'm excited about.
That's been the promise they've been holding out for the developers conference.
Seeing the developers conference and whether you actually believe that model is going to be as good. I don't know.
I don't really need a robot following me around. I don't. What would it do for me exactly?
If it did the dishes, that'd be pretty cool.
I think it's going to do that. I have three dogs following me around. But I don't, I'm just not sure that it can help me. File my nails or something?
I'm not sure it can help you either.
What would your robot do for you?
Pick up clothes, do the laundry.
I can think of some really perverted things. I mean, there's a Curb Your Enthusiasm I've seen where, I don't think, you know, if you're married, I don't think that's going to be. You've seen those things. Probably have one. Google is reportedly considering. You know what moves everything forward? We've said this a million times. You know what moves technology forward all the time? Some sick use of these things.
Gambling does too.
Vice moves technology forward.
Well, Apple's always been delayed, actually, on technology, and by the way, on those type of issues. So I'm not sure you're going to get the robot doing those things.
Google, well, if not them, someone. We bet on Drudge all the time stuff that's coming. Read about it. Read about it all the time. It'll talk back.
I'm still trying to figure out when Einhorn first went long gold. I see an article from 2022, but it was before that.
No, it was way before that. It was probably between 5 and 10 years.
Wait, 2013? Could it possibly have been that long ago?
Yes, because you know how anything we talk about, like when someone, you try to figure out when someone died, and it was like, I think that was like a couple years ago, and it was like 2004.
2013. So in 2013, it said that his fund was down 11.8%.
Because of crappy gold.
In part because of gold.
Oh.
Wow. He created an actual gold fund.
Yeah.
But he was long on it in 2022, and since then.
It's been long since, probably. Yeah. But, you know, it's doing okay.
It's new highs. By the way, this is when gold was below $1,200 an ounce.
Right.
It fell below it for the first time on back in 2013, years. So
it was
it's $1,000 above that.
It hit 2,000 years ago. Maybe a decade. I don't remember exactly. And then
today it's 2,300.
Right, but it hit 2,000, it went back below 2,000 for like five. I don't know. I'm not going to say because people are watching so closely. People that were wrong about everything else.
It's up 450% over 20 years. That's quite a bit better than I would have expected.
Right.
cheese will be next.
Coming up next on Squawk Pod, IAC Chairman Barry Diller, the media mogul who created Fox, ran Paramount Studios, and owned QVC, weighs in on the evolution of streaming.
If you just take the entertainment business model, it's perfect. You're perfectly able to compete, but delude yourself that you can either displace or compete really with Netflix. Netflix won 5 years ago.
Diller's take on Disney's boardroom victory, a four-day work week, and AI.
All attention should go towards regulating artificial intelligence, and we don't have a minute to lose.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration. Our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
You're listening to Squawk Pod.
Good morning and welcome back to Squawk Box here on CNBC, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Joe Kernan, along with Becky Quick and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tomorrow, there's a jobs number?
Yeah.
Yes, it
jobs
is.
Friday.
Jobs Friday.
Again?
Mark your calendar.
It's really
Set
amazing.
Set your DVR. Wake up early.
It's really amazing. And that is all. We're waiting for some data point that says that there's some reason to cut rates.
Right. And ADP didn't give it to us yesterday.
Yep.
So we'll see what the jobs weekly jobless claims show this week. But yesterday, ADP was hotter than expected, which feeds back into that argument that the economy is stronger than expected. The jobs market is stronger than expected, feeds into what we've seen with inflation stronger than expected.
And this is the best day.
Meantime, a potential deal for Paramount Global advancing potentially. A Bloomberg report saying the Sherry Redstone, Paramount's controlling shareholders, reached a tentative agreement to sell her stake to David Ellison's Skydance Media. Multiple reports say that the two sides have agreed on the broad framework for a deal and then will now have a 30-day window of exclusive talks to work out the details. That would pause any other conversations with other bidders, including Apollo Global, which has offered $26 billion in cash for Paramount. But, of course, there's the breakdown between her side and the company and whether you're taking just the studio or what you're really doing. Disney winning its proxy fight against activist investor Nelson Peltz. Shareholders reelecting the company's full slate of directors and rebuffing Peltz's campaign to put himself and former Disney CFO Jay Rizzullo on the board. In a statement, Peltz saying that he was proud of the impact that the firm had had on, he says, refocusing Disney. For his part, Disney CEO Bob Iger calling the proxy contest a distraction and said now that it is in the past, the company can focus 100% on growth, shareholder value creation, and creative excellence. Join us right now to talk about this and so many other things that are going on in the news right now. Barry Diller, IAC chairman and senior executive. He's also, of course, Expedia's chairman and senior executive. And it's great to have you at the table,
the foremost
Mr. Diller.
Media executive.
The foremost. And
then what did he say? He said foremost.
Foremost.
Foremost me.
Foremost me. So foremost us.
Yeah.
Let's start with Disney. You've known Bob Iger and you've known this company for a very, very long time. You've watched this all play out.
So
what do you think? And what do you think that Ike Perlmutter and Nelson Peltz are going to be doing or thinking over the next 12 months?
It is a lot of a sound and fury signifying nothing. It is a grand waste of time. The only reason that makes sense to be an activist is if you want to overthrow the chief executive. Then I can understand you get in and you are able to do that. But if that's not your goal, to think that you can give them a white paper, okay, what are you going to tell them to do? Cut costs, make better movies? What is the value add?
Do you think that they are done, though?
Done?
Meaning, look, Donald Trump lost the last election and he's back. Is Ike Perlmutter and Nelson Peltz going to try to come back?
And do what? That's an insurrection? Question. Recount the votes? Say it was a fraudulent election?
Not now. I'm saying 12 months from now.
It depends on what happens with Disney. The thing is, Bob Iger came back a little while ago. He diagnosed the situation. He is as good an executive as you could. You could not buy, beg, or borrow him. The fact that he said he was bored in life and wanted to come back was the greatest thing that could happen to Disney. He got back. He did the sensible things. He cut costs. He's going to get them back into a better creative mode with their movies, which got so discombobulated by the previous CEO that just to repair that is going to take some time. So he was doing all the right things. Who needs this noise coming at you for what productivity?
Okay, as a former Paramount man, yes. What do you think about the hand that Cherry Redstone has? And what do you think about the hand that David Ellison and the folks at...
Well, now I guess they've gone exclusive. I would not want to be a member of their of their special committee. That this group now has to decide to value the Skydance company. You know, all companies that get internal valuations are just wrong. I mean, they're usually blown up beyond all proportion of reality. So you can say it's worth $4 billion or $6 billion or whatever billion it's worth, but what is it actually worth? And how could the special committee make a decision to exchange basically Paramount shares for that asset without, I don't know, a trillion lawsuits at their throats? I think it's an impossible thing to do, but good luck to them.
What else could they do? I mean, it's so complicated by...
I don't think there's any way you can take where you have that kind of conflict of interest, where you've got one party who now has actually voting control of the company.
Right.
And on the other side, you've got a transaction that actually, there is no way that independent shareholders could ever say, oh, we really want to dilute our stock for this company that does what? Make some movies, has 1,800 people in animation. I mean, I think it's just a very hard trick.
There are tax implications depending on how they do it and the things to go down the road. So it needs to be sold as a whole or not.
No, I think you either, look, I don't know. I think, first of all, it's the worst time in the world to sell this thing. I mean, it couldn't be, I mean, it is a perfect candidate for actually turning itself around. But the idea that you ought to sell it, because whoever gets in it, at whatever base they get in it for, there's an enormous amount of work that's going to have to take place. So
that's really interesting, just the idea that you think this is the worst possible time. That suggests that you think there
time.
Is a light
I mean,
beyond
like
this,
saying,
that this is not the end of media writ large. That
oh,
this
my
is
God,
not
no.
Melting.
Paramount
okay, so
is perfectly
that.
Capable of being of competing.
I think there are so many people who think that media right now, the old media in particular, is never going to be able to make it or make good again. And it's going to get its lunch eaten by all
well,
of these
you,
new
you,
entrants in streaming.
You know, you have to go back to the kind of original craziness, which is best defined as a group of people get together, invent the greatest rocket with the most precise delivery system, and they set it off, and then they run to exactly where it's going to hit, which is what the entire business did to get into trying to compete insanely with Netflix.
Right.
And so they're all viable entities. They're just going to be much smaller. They can't. They've lost hegemony. That's gone now to Netflix, to Apple and and to Amazon, because they have different business models. If you just take the entertainment business model, it's perfect. You're perfectly able to compete. But to delude yourself that you can either displace or compete really with Netflix, Netflix won 5 years ago.
One of the big winners, though, which you didn't mention, was social media and the role the social media is playing in all this. I'm curious, we had Steven Mnuchin here, who said that he would like to try to buy TikTok if it was available, given the...
Because of his great expertise in social media.
Would you like to buy TikTok?
No.
No interest?
No. By the way, TikTok's TikTok is a very popular thing. Anybody who goes on it gets addicted to it, and then they spend aimless amounts of time twicking through, you know, 8-second or 12-second videos. It's entertaining. I mean, it's addictive. It's all that. But who cares?
Do you think it's a national security issue or risk?
No.
You don't?
No.
Why?
Because I don't. Because I don't think the fact that the idea that the that China is going to use it to indoctrinate, one of the claims is it will use TikTok to indoctrinate Americans to interests of China.
Right.
Is, I think, absurd.
You mentioned Apple before, and I was going to ask you, you've been on this broadcast a lot talking over the years about the regulatory issues around Google. I think you talked about Expedia, for example, which has been challenged by what you think is a monopoly that Google has on search.
Well, I think there's a monopoly. Google is a monopoly.
More than that. I mean, so my question to you, though, is as you look at Apple now, and you see that the DOJ has brought a case now against Apple, how do you feel about that, given the App Store and all of the things that you know about that company? Is that different or not?
I think what needs to happen, all attention should go towards regulating artificial intelligence. And we don't have a minute to lose. I don't know if any of you saw it the other day. It was an April Fool's Day thing, which had videos of Trump and Biden that were absolutely perfect replicas of each of them talking in their voice, gibberish. Now, when you have that, what do you know? How do you know where truth is? So we've got to have legislation that says it is illegal to make up something, take someone's persona, and manufacture something that is not them. So you've got to deal with that now. You've got to deal with
it's always been done, but not to where you
couldn't
tell.
Do you believe?
And no, you could always.
You
could always,
do it, but now you can't tell.
I mean, the thing of we found out that the Princess of Wales doctored her photograph.
Yeah.
Well, okay, because you saw she did it badly. An arm was in the wrong place. Done, like simple AI. Nobody in the world would.
Do you think these guys will
totally different?
And you don't
person.
Think they can self-regulate themselves? You know Sam Altman very well, but you've
yes,
also been on the other side of Sam Altman as it comes to way OpenAI
is. Two things have to happen. One, you have to race to have legislation that lets, of course, it birth and grow, but is also reasonably protective. The second thing you have to do is you have to redefine. I'm going to get weeds here. Fair use. In terms of being able to publish things, you have to say fair use, which allowed you to take things from and, you know, snippets right. and do whatever. But the idea that you can sweep up, for instance, all of Expedia's content and use it that it took us billions of dollars to create is nuts. You have to redefine it and say it is illegal. And then what will happen is transactions will get made between the parties on what fair use really is, which is you're using their content, you get paid for it.
It's funny because when Satya Nadella was speaking to Lester Holt from NBC, he talked about that and he said, look, it's a new technology, we have to find new ways to deal with it, which sounded like they were looking for a Section 230 for AI, where, you know, let them grow, let them flourish, don't blame them for anything.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. You can't. I mean, listen, the Google has said to us, I mean, we've been in
battle with them for
endless discussions.
Years.
Well, we partners and whatever. They said, yes, absolutely, we should pay for your content when we get paid. But what percent of zero would you like? Because right now we have zero revenue, to which we say, that's lovely. But in fact, because you have a monopoly, you have to make a transaction now, which presupposes some things. But everybody who's in this now is saying that that they want to define fair use to be they can take everything. And it's wrong. It should be changed. I mean, it should be dealt right. with.
I got a question, not a political question about former President Trump, but actually a business question about Truth Social. You've seen this stock on the move in this, I'll call it remarkable, maybe even crazy way.
I'll just say two words, GameStop.
GameStop. That's what you think is going on here.
It's ridiculous.
Do you
the company
think,
has no revenue.
But do you think it could ever be a bigger business? Do
no.
you think if he wins the presidency,
no.
it becomes
why?
I'm asking.
Why would it be bigger? Look, he's only interesting now because he's out there entertaining the folks. I hope if he does get elected, he just plays golf for 4 years. But
so do you think that all of the investors in this are getting scammed? Do you think they think this is a transference of wealth from one side to the other, and that's the goal? What do you think is happening?
I think they're dopes. I mean, who would buy a company that literally has, I mean, I think, what does it have, $30 of revenue? Why would you put a, how could you put a value on it? They're buying it for other reasons, just like they bought theaters when there was no theater business, or they bought GameStop or whatever. It's stupid. It's stupid stuff.
It was 1,000 times revenue, I think. I think it was four, wasn't it $4 million? It was
$4 million in revenue. That's $4 million in revenue. It's ridiculous. I'm not saying it's not revenue.
$4 million.
Why are you even talking about this? It's a scam, just like everything he's ever been involved in is some sort of con.
Let me pivot.
Amazing survival of a con man is just beyond comprehension. But there it is.
Let me ask you a different question. We had Steve Cohen on the broadcast yesterday, and he made a comment that I thought I wanted you to weigh in on, which was he said that he thinks we are moving to a four-day work week. And he thinks of this not just in terms of what it's going to mean for companies themselves, but as an investment
for leisure,
thesis.
For travel and leisure.
Travel and leisure. Do you think that we really are having a four-day work weekend? But the other piece of it is you've been very vocal about wanting to have people in the office, I think, 5 days a week, no?
I'll settle for four. Better than two, or two and a half, or three and a quarter. The craziness that we have all entered out of this process, this COVID process where you just couldn't be with each other. But once it was over, why didn't we just go back, so to speak, to life? We didn't, because people said, well, we did an employee survey and our employees really would like the flexibility. I said, yes, sure. You ask an employee, what do they want? They want total flexibility,
less work,
stay home and get paid more. Of course, why not? But but the idea of all these conniptions everybody has gone through in various of our companies, literally, I cannot keep track of it. Some is 50-50. So I said, well, how do you do 50-50? Is it 2.5 days? How's the half? I mean, it's kind of absurd. Others are 3 and 2. Some are 1 week a month. Some are come in for sure Tuesdays and Thursdays. It's madness, which is what is going to lead to, I think, sensibly, not necessarily a 4 day work week, but 4 days in the office, and Fridays you can work from home or work at your own schedule. And I think that is going to be the sensible evolution of all this, but it has to be standardized. You can't have 17,000 different programs, because how do you deal with all the things around it? It doesn't make any sense.
To me, it seems like it adds to inequality issues, because if you are a salaried employee, you can have these conversations. If you're an hourly worker, you can't. And it must just seem like, are you kidding me? This is what they're talking about.
What if you're doing an infrastructure project? What if you need to get something done?
Well, you can't. Look, if you have to talk.
Normal people have to work 5 days.
If you have to talk to anyone else, you cannot work from home.
I mean, that too.
If your work involves anything other than sitting and staring at a screen or talking to a customer on customer service, which doesn't involve anybody else in your company, okay. But if you relate to anyone else, come into an office and be part of an environment that has so many different things running around inside of it that betters your life, your career, and betters the business. But, and by the way, I do think that we're going to go to 4 days. I hope it'll get standardized. Fridays.
Construction people?
No. Look, there are people, if you're in, like with MGM, we have a lot of resorts, right?
Yeah.
You have to come
resort. You can't vacation on Friday.
In order to go to the work.
Well, so that's the interesting part. And this is what I wanted to ask about the investment.
We're talking about white.
This is the investment thesis question as it relates to this.
Yes.
Is, you know, here you had Steve Cohen basically saying, so now everyone's got an extra day to play golf. For you, does that mean that there's an extra day for people to get on an airplane, go to Vegas, and gamble at an MGM?
I think partially so. Yeah, I think Fridays is going to be, I think for some businesses, Friday will be a work day, but not in the office.
But does that mean people are going to be renting more VRBOs
I definitely think we're going to more or less, not an absolute, because it is an absolute. If you're going to be, if you have a gas station, you have to be there to do the gas, if there are gas stations. But I do think that it's going to get standardized. And I do believe that probably 4 days. Look, it is just right now, it really is chaos in these companies.
Right.
You have so many different programs. In our companies, which total, I don't know, 60,000 or something like that, we've probably got 10 or 15 different plans of which days. We confuse, oh no, that company, they're in Thursdays. Oh no, they came Tuesday.
Right.
Anyway.
Before we let you go, I wanted to ask you about this deal. You sold what I think is one of the great iconic magazine brands.
We didn't
in life.
Sell it. We did not sell it.
To Josh Kushner
and Carly Kloss.
Carly Kloss. You did not sell it. I know you still have a piece of it.
Well, what we did is we licensed it because while we do a lot with Life magazine in terms of the archives, we don't publish Life magazine any longer. And Josh came and he made a passionate argument as to why Life magazine could be reborn and that he wanted to take the responsibility for doing it. And I said, that's fantastic. I will back anybody's passion that's got a brain, and he's got more than a brain.
They're doing this with a whole bunch of magazines now.
Yeah. Well, not a whole bunch, but
Sports
whatever.
Illustrated licensed. Yeah.
Do you think that the magazine business has any kind of future?
Yes, we are the largest.
I know you do. That's why I'm asking the question.
Publisher in this country, both print and online. And yes, of course I do. Now, look, the print business, like all other things, is evolving. It's like, is there going to be a cable business 10 years from now? I say yes, but will it be less of a business? Certainly yes. Print magazines aren't going to go away, but there, of course, going to be less of them. There are going to be more. People Magazine, we still, I think, 350 million books we publish, from People to Better Homes and Gardens to, I don't know, you want me to promote all our titles, but yeah, for sure. Magazines, print, like many other things, decline. But if you manage it correctly, it doesn't go away. It's like my argument about these movie companies, the legacy companies. If you manage them, they'll be okay. They just aren't going to be able to compete with tech overlords.
Still go to the doctor's offices. Aging population, you need magazines.
Barry Diller, thank you so much for joining us and touching on so many different issues this morning. It's great to see you.
Nice to be with you.
Thank you.
Next on Squawk Pod, remember MySpace rankings? Well, they're back. Snapchat has rolled out a new feature to its subscribed users. See where you rank in your friends' circle of friends. Tech venture capitalist and dad of two, Bradley Tusk.
Will Ferrell, who's like the bad guy, says, like, am I taking crazy pills? It feels like I'm taking crazy pills. That's what it feels like.
Social media is impacting teen mental health. So what can we do?
What do you think Congress does?
Nothing.
That important conversation is right after this.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
This is Squawk Pod. Here's Becky Quick.
Up and Becky, cue.
More potential trouble for social media. An article in the Wall Street Journal highlights how Snapchat's friend ranking feature, which shows users how close they are to someone with solar system style graphics, is causing anxiety in teens. The author of the article notes that she spoke with young people who have seen friendships and relationships strained because of this feature. You get to find out, are you Mercury, the person's closest planet? Are you Uranus? Joining us right now on this, the fight by lawmakers against TikTok and more, is Bradley Tusk. He's the CEO of Tusk Ventures. Bradley, when I saw this article, I couldn't believe it. The idea that you can pay up for Snapchat Plus, it's $3 or $4 a month for the app, and then you get to find out just how close you are to your friends based on how often they're communicating with you versus others. That seems like the worst, most diabolical thing to make teenagers and even youngsters below the age of 13 feel terrible about themselves.
So you remember the movie Zoolander? where so Will Ferrell, there's, do you guys see that?
I remember.
Right. So there's a scene where Will Ferrell, who's like the bad guy, says like, "Am I taking crazy pills? It feels like I'm taking crazy pills." That's what it feels like here, right? Which is, you know, the reality of the situation is, as you know, and we've talked about a lot, is it's a disaster out there. It's like the World Happiness Report came out, I think, a week or two ago. The U.S. fell out of the top 20 for the first time ever because people under the age of 30 are so unhappy. We would be ranked 62nd if we just had people under the age of 30. 30% of teenage girls have said they've seriously considered suicide. A Harvard study found that 61% of teenagers have deep loneliness. The Surgeon General came out the other day and said that teenagers can't conduct a normal in-person conversation anymore because they're so addicted to their screens. And then Snap takes this thing and says, how do we take the worst situation and make it a lot worse? Like, it is almost like they were saying, we really want to be regulated, so why don't, and the Congress is so incompetent that let's do something so offensive and so crazy that they'll have no choice but to finally act.
And it's like they're daring them. What do you think Congress does?
Nothing. Nothing. I mean, look, we're still waiting for the TikTok ban passed the House overwhelmingly, nothing in the Senate. The Kids Online Safety Act, you know, had a bunch of momentum.
So what
nothing.
Do you think, though, was driving this decision? And do you think that even the public pressure and conversation we're having now creates some, I mean, the question is, does it make somebody like Evan Spiegel say to himself, we made a mistake, maybe we should rethink this?
No.
Is it unforced error?
Very profitable.
Or do we say, or does he say to himself, you know what, I'm doubling down on this and feel defensive about it? In terms of what you think it actually will do to the business?
I think that until they actually learn that there is a price to be paid, they will do what the market keeps telling them to do, which is generate more users and more activity and more revenue.
So the question actually is, you think this feature will? So
for sure.
If I were like, bucks a pop on
you
this.
Know, I'm terrified that my kids are going to use this.
Yes,
right?
And it gets the kids. It's into this gambling psychology again, where you can't disconnect from the screen have to continue.
Right.
It's like how you gain your numbers higher. I have to make sure I'm still texting you and in the lines and in the chats.
Yeah, I mean, my kids, my son, like he talked about his friends have these like snap streaks all the time, and like he'll get emails at like 2 a.m. of like someone sealing or whatever it is just to keep it going. And it's I have two teenagers. They have no common sense.
Right.
They have no judgment. So they are absolutely going to use this feature. And the only
Before
way to
the
protect
frontal
them
lobe
is
gets
to do
fully
it.
Developed.
Right. So Evan Spiegel, if you're
which I think happens around
jerk.
50, I'm learning. I'm just getting there.
Seriously, Evan Spiegel, if you're listening, you're a jerk. Stop it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really know what else. And then Congress, same thing, which is they just won't act. And look, you can look at nefarious arguments like there are people, for example, Senator Schumer, my old boss, his kids happen to be employed by platforms like Facebook, and perhaps he has personal financial reasons that he doesn't want to take this issue on, or it might be simply that the two parties or each members can't agree because they all want to be the hero of it and their own perfect solution. But there are so many different things from Section 230, which you and I have debated on here a bunch of times, to COSA, to the TikTok ban, and we don't do any of them.
Joe brought this up before. When he sat down, you said we're looking at the
I'd feel bad.
Last days of the Holy Roman
It'd
Empire.
It'd just be like me. There'd be no orbits of anything. I would feel bad, too. But I definitely don't want to feel like Uranus, like you said earlier, right?
Right. Or Pluto, where you get, like, disqualified as a planet.
The article used Uranus, which is why I said that. Well, Pluto's not even a planet, so I don't even know if it's a planet.
That's where you know you're
really... So you went out as far as you could go
without hitting Pluto?
How about Neptune? That's pretty damn far.
Right. You're an outcast when you're Pluto. When you're the thing that's no longer even considered a planet,
right. I don't even know. I'm not on this.
That was
like my high school experience.
I think Pluto's back. Pluto might be back.
Oh, it's back?
Yeah, Goofy, no way.
Got it.
Well, okay, so what's to be done is there are some movements that are being made at state levels. There are some movements that are being made where, you know, school districts are coming together and going after these social media apps because they're the ones who are left to clean up the mess on it.
Yeah, there's a few. So one is we did see, like you said, 4 school districts in Canada just sue the platform saying our mental health costs for our dealing with our own kids have gone skyrocketed because of you. States are doing a good job, and it is bipartisan. So Governor DeSantis in Florida yesterday signed a bill that will allow give parents more control over what their kids see.
And you can't be on it if you're not at least 14.
Correct. And there's a bill here in Albany that was similar, would give parents more control, was making progress, and then social media platforms bought off lots of left-wing interest groups who have a lot of sway in Albany, and now all of a sudden the bill is being held up.
What do you mean they bought them off? What'd they do?
You know, everyone's got an annual fundraiser, a gala, something. And, you know, they make donations to various things. They hire people's family and friends. They hire lobbyists who are close with them or used to work there. And then they make the case to say, oh, you know, yeah, but this is the wrong solution. If we pursue it this way, we're going to curb free speech, or we're going to give LGBTQ kids sort of fewer outlets to express themselves, or whatever it is. And ultimately, though, those are all just excuses that the platforms make up to block any sort of real reform. And then when they fail at that, they just take it to court, right? So California, Texas, they're just tied up. They've passed legislation. It's all tied up in court right now. So, I mean, ultimately, it's great the states are doing this. It's great the school boards are doing this. We've talked before about the notion of, I think that controllers, city and state, should talk about potentially divesting from social media platforms like Meta. And I think they have so much market power that could actually be meaningful. But overall, you know, a lot of this does require federal action, and we have a completely dysfunctional, incompetent federal government.
I mean, that's a number. 30% have seriously considered.
Yeah.
Almost one out of three.
Yeah. Yeah. Seriously.
And got to change some.
Over 20% have had a major depressive episode in the last year, compared to 8% for adults. I don't know what else we need. I mean, kids are like literally, usually when something bad happens, let's stop this before someone gets hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, countless kids are hurt every day. We don't do anything.
Bradley, thank you for continuing to bring this to people's attention and lay it out so clearly.
Yeah,
thanks. And Finland's the happiest place on earth.
7 years in a row. Apparently, they resent the title. Have you heard this?
They look miserable. Whenever I see pictures, they're doing the tango, and yeah, it's dark.
They look cold.
But yeah. There's a lot of Finlandia.
That's the pod for today. Thanks for listening. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Please tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 Eastern. And to get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears, follow Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. We'll meet you right back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.